last year when we spoke about different very elementary issues when we talk about the halacha of Bishul B'Shabbos. One thing that I forgot to mention, which I find very, very fascinating, is if I were to ask you, so many of the examples that we gave when we talk about Bishul are when the Rambam defines the malacha, he says, taking one item and changing its status through the medium of heat. So what would you say when a person heats up water on Shabbos? That's the primary example that everyone gives of Bishul B'Shabbos. Right? I take a soup, I heat it up. We had a discussion last week about do we say Bishul Achar Bishul when it comes to Davar Lach, or is it only a Davar Yavesh, right? We had this discussion. I hope everyone remembers. So what I find very, very interesting is a discussion in the Sefer referred to as Shaul Meshiv. Shaul Meshiv was a Sefer written by Rabbi Yosef Shaul Natanzan, who was one of the greatest Gedolim in Europe in the 1800s. And Rabbi Yosef Shaul Natanzan has in one of his tshuvas a question that he wonders, who said that if I heat up water on Shabbos, I would actually be in violation of any malacha of Bishul at all? Now, that sounds preposterous to us. Why would you think otherwise? So let's try to think. Why would I think otherwise? Why would I think otherwise? Yeah.
Maybe because you're not really changing it.
Exactly. I would think otherwise because I'm not really changing it. Originally, it started off being water. Now it continues to be water. Everything else that I cook actually changes in its status as a result of the cooking that I'm doing, as a result of the heat that I'm implementing. But if I'm not really changing anything, it used to be water, and now it's still water. Just got a little warmer, a little hotter. Maybe I would say that that is not a prohibition of Bishul at all. This is a discussion that the Shalom Meshev has. Again, a very surprising discussion, but it's something that he talks about. And he draws a parallel, perhaps, from another place in Halacha where we find that there's a prohibition to cook. What would that be? Where are the other areas in Halacha where we say there's some kind of restriction on cooking? Yeah? Lo sevash gedi b'chalev imo is a great example, not what I was looking for. What's another one? Bishul Akum. Bishul Akum is a rabbinic prohibition. The Gemara Maseches Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Hei, Lamed Zayin, talks about one has a prohibition against eating food that was cooked by a non-Jew. Does that mean anything that a non-Jew will cook immediately becomes prohibited? Says the Gemara, no. There are guidelines, there are rules and regulations for what we assume to be problematic, and what we assume will not be a problem at all. Nothing to get concerned about. One of the things that is discussed in the Gemara as being an activity that a Nachri, that a non-Jew will do that will not render the food to be problematic is if the Nachri takes food, but it didn't change because of the cooking. If it was Nechal Kamoshu Huchai, if this food was able to be eaten the way it is, and now the non-Jew happened to cook it, there would be no problem at all. So say, for example, if I have, what would be a good example of that?
Salad.
Salad. What do you mean, salad? No, the non-Jew, in order to have a problem of Bishul Akum, it has to be that the non-Jew was Mevashel. The non-Jew cooked something. Let's say, for example, a baked apple. So, an apple can be eaten raw, an apple can also be eaten baked, or cooked. But I really don't care so much the fact that the Nachri went and cooked the apple, because the apple was already edible before the Nachri got involved. So therefore, says the Gemara, there's no real problem if you're going to have a Nachri that's going to cook something that didn't really change this status of the item. Before the Nachri cooked it, it was edible. Now after the Nachri cooked it, it continues to be edible, and therefore I really don't have to have a major concern. That is what the Gemara says is a guiding principle with regard to Bishul Akum, and therefore says the Shaul Meshiv, maybe I should extrapolate from that to the laws of Bishul B'Shabbos as well. And maybe I should say that the same way there's no prohibition of Bishul Akum when it comes to a non-Jew cooking something that did not really change its status, so too when it comes to Bishul B'Shabbos, if you cook something that doesn't really change its status, it shouldn't be a problem either. And therefore, water should not be a part of the prohibition of Bishul B'Shabbos, which would be shocking. And it would be amazing if that were true. And the problem is that it's not true. Why is it not true? Because the Gemara gives plenty of examples. Two of them are very explicit in the Gemara. The Rambam quotes a case in the Gemara Maseches Beis Alam Adalid where the Gemara tells us that you have a whole bunch of people who are gathering together and each one participates, each one contributes one little bit in order to form one larger malacha. So say, for example, Echad nasan esa'ur, ve'echad nasan esa'etzim, ve'echad nasan esa'kedera, ve'echad nasan esa'mayim. You have a bunch of people together. One of them steps forward and puts a whole bunch of logs. One of them steps forward and puts a match. One of them steps forward and puts the pan on top of it. Now, so far, each one of them didn't really do a malacha. Each one of them on their own didn't do a malacha. The match was already lit. You just put it here. The logs are not lit. You didn't do anything. It's going to catch. The pan has nothing in it. And now somebody comes and pours water into that pot. Who's chayiv? So the Gemara discusses, who's going to be chayiv? Who's going to violate the malacha? Well, the Rambam says, kulam chayavim mishum avasha. All of them have violated the isser of bishul b'shabbos. What does that mean? It means that when the person came along and poured the water into the pot, and somebody subsequently came and put a piece of meat into the pot, and now you're going to cook the meat in the water, it means that the person who put the water was already in violation of bishul. Don't you see that cooking water on Shabbos is a prohibition of bishul b'shabbos? And that's why that is just one of the proofs that is brought by the Achronim, but this Shalom Eshet is something that is very, very surprising, and that is why the Mishneh Berurah writes very explicitly in the very first Se'if, in Siman Shin Yud Ches, don't make a mistake. Some people don't realize what the Mishneh Berurah is alluding to, but he says, don't make a mistake and think that if you cook water on Shabbos, you're not going to violate any prohibition of bishul. It is not the case. Says the Mishneh Berurah, if you cook water on Shabbos, you're going to certainly be in violation of bishul b'Shabbos, and this does not follow the general guidelines of the laws that govern bishul akum. Totally different halachos, totally different reasons, and therefore they cannot be compared in this regard at all. Fine. As far as bishul is concerned, what is the status of cooking on Shabbos when we come to a secondary heat source? So what do we mean by that? What I mean by that is as follows. There is something referred to as a kli rishon. There is something else that is referred to as a kli sheni. And that is a very important distinction that we're going to have to understand very well in order to move forward. So we have a Mishnah Maseches Shabbos, Daf Membeis, Amud Aleph, where the Mishnah tells us the following. Ha'ilfas v'hakadera. If I have a pot or a kettle, shehaviron meiroschen. So I have this pot that is on the fire, on the flames, and now I take it off of the flames, but it's still burning hot because it was on the fire for a long time. Says the Mishnah, lo yiten letochan tavlin. I'm not allowed to put spices into that pot. Why not? What's the concern? Because it's bishul. Why is it bishul? Because even though it's not directly on the fire anymore, it's still boiling hot because it was on the fire for so long. That is what's referred to as a kli rishon. The pot that was on the fire has a status of a kli rishon and it's able to cook different items. And therefore, on Shabbos, because we're concerned that if you put something into a kli rishon, it's actually going to cook, therefore, as a result of that, we say on Shabbos, you're not allowed to put certain items into a kli rishon because we're concerned that they are going to cook. And this is what the Shulchan Aruch Paskins and Siman Shin Yud Ches Se'if Tes, that we say that bishul b'kli rishon is considered to be bishul. The same way if it was on the fire, it would be cooking. So too, right when it comes off the fire, it would be considered cooking as well. How long is that going to retain its status of being like it's still on the fire? The Shulchan Aruch wonders. You're going to say forever? That doesn't make sense. After an hour, it's going to cool off. After 2 hours, it's going to cool off, whatever it may be. So it doesn't make sense that 2 hours after it came off the fire, it's still considered to be bishul if I put something into that pot. Says the Shulchan Aruch, so long as it still retains the heat to a level of yad soledes, then it's still considered to be bishul if I throw something into that pot. So I take a hot pot of chicken soup off of the fire. It's no longer on the flames itself. And now I throw something into that pot. That would be bishul. How long am I still in violation of bishul after it comes off the fire? So long as that pot is still going to retain the heat of yad soledes, which is a little while. It is a little while. That is still considered to be bishul if I would throw something into that mixture. Okay? Great. Now we move forward. So what would be a practical example of a kli rishon, as we said? The pot of soup. Where you take a pot of chalent off of the element, off of the crock pot, that is still considered to be a kli rishon, and that would be considered a violation of bishul were I to throw anything in it. Now let's take it down a notch. What happens when you have a kli sheni? I'm skipping the middle stage because I really just don't want to get into it. Iroi is a big discussion in the Rishonim, means when I pour from one to the other. Let's not get into that. Now we're going to talk about now the next level, which is a kli sheni. The assumption of the Mishnah Maseches Shabbos is kli sheni eino mevasho. While we just said that a kli rishon, when you have something that comes directly off of the fire, even though it's no longer on the flames itself, it still retains its status as a kli rishon and it would be able to cook items that were thrown into it. The opposite is true when we talk about a kli sheni. A kli sheni means that it now has exchanged its location, and it now is to be found in a second pot. So say, for example, I have soup that was cooking in a pot on the fire. I now transfer it into a bowl. That bowl would be considered a kli sheni. The general assumption of the Mishnah, as we mentioned, is kli sheni eino mevashel. Why should that be the case? If a kli sheni is just as hot as the kli rishon, right? If I take soup out of a pot and I put it into a bowl, it's still boiling hot. I'm still going to hurt myself if I put my hand in. So why would you say that a kli sheni eino mevashel, whereas a kli rishon is mevashel? How do you explain the difference? So Tosus explains very simply. We have a concept that he refers to as defanos mekaros. What does defanos mekaros mean? It means that the walls of this item, of this utensil, are going to cool down the substance. So what does that mean? It means when the pot was on the actual fire, the pot is retaining the heat even after it comes off of the fire, because everything inside of that pot is so hot. But now I take a bowl out of the drying rack, I fill up the bowl with soup. So the assumption that Tosis writes is, because this bowl was nowhere near the fire, and because the bowl is not hot, I have to assume that the bowl, the walls of that bowl, are going to cool down the substance that is inside of it, and therefore I have no reason to assume that this is going to retain the heat of yatso lettuce. Even though right now it might still be yatso lettuce, but it's going to very quickly deteriorate to no longer be that hot, as we know that is what happens, and therefore Tosis says that is why if you throw something into a kli sheni, it would not be assumed to have the ability to cook that item, because defanos mekaros. Okay? So that's the general rule. Kli rishon is mevashel, kli sheni is not mevashel. Okay. Although that is the general rule, the Gemara now introduces us to a new category, which is referred to as kalei habishel. Kalei habishel means, while it's true that most natural foods that we're going to eat are not going to have the ability to be cooked in a kli sheni because the kli sheni is already so much cooled down from the way it was on the fire. However, we have some very sensitive items that if you were to throw them into even a kli sheni, they would get cooked. The million-dollar question is, how do you define what is part of that category? What is considered to be a kalei habishel? What is considered to be, kal means very easy, habishel means it is very easy to cook it. What do you consider to be a part of that category of kalei habishel? How do you define that? So the Gemara actually in Maseches Shabbos writes very explicitly that if you have water and you put water into a kli sheni, water will not cook in a kli sheni. Similarly, says the Gemara, if I have oil and I pour oil into a kli sheni, that will not cook. So I have a bowl of soup and I pour oil into that bowl of soup. I'm not sure why you would do that. Why would you pour more oil into a bowl of soup? But let's say I would do that. That would not be mevashel. That is what the Gemara tells us. The third example the Gemara gives is spices. If I take spices and I put them into a kli sheni, they would not cook in a kli sheni, whereas if I threw spices into a kli rishon, it would cook those spices. Now, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach takes issue with that third example that is given in the Gemara. And he says, while it's true that the Gemara says when I have spices, they are not able to cook if they are put into a kli sheni, says Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, nowadays when we have spices that are cut so thin, right? You look at the spice cabinet and you see when spices open up and they make a mess all over the place, you see how thin they are. It's very hard to clean it up. Back in the days of the Gemara, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, spices were very thick. And therefore, when you threw it into a kli sheni, it wouldn't cook because it was so thick and it didn't have the ability. It wasn't hot enough to cook something that was that thick. However, today he says when our spices are sliced so thin, we have now to reimagine that. We have to reevaluate whether or not it's really true that a kli sheni will not be able to cook the spices. Maybe now that they are so thin, then in fact a kli sheni would be able to be mevasha. That is the big discussion. The Chazon Ish writes, listen, whatever the Gemara says is part of the list, is part of the list. And whatever the Gemara says is not part of the list, we don't have to go ahead and start making new chumras. That is the opinion of the Chazon Ish. But there are many other Acharonim who disagree with the Chazon Ish. And they say, because we are not exactly sure what is considered part of kalei habishel b'zman hazeh and what is not, and the difference would be, if you have something which is kalei habishel, if I have something which is very easy to cook, then I would say even putting it into a kli sheni would be problematic. Right? Am I making sense? Even putting it into a kli sheni would be problematic. If I'm something that is not part of the category of Kali Abishal, then I would say that as long as it's in a klisheni, there would be no problem of cooking at all. So that is why this makes a major difference. And if Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said, well, today, it's very hard to know what is part of that category. And even when the Gemara gave us examples of Kali Abishal and what is not Kali Abishal, it's not necessarily the same reality as we have today, as we mentioned, because of the spices that are sliced so thin. It could be that it's potentially a problem to take spices and put them into a klisheni, because they would cook it. Okay? Now, we spoke about the difference between a kli rishon and a klisheni with regard to, let's say, soup and hot water. What would be the status, right? So what do we say? If you have soup in a kli rishon, it's still considered to be very, very hot, and it would have the ability to cook. If I have soup in a klisheni, then what? Suddenly the discussion changes. Klisheni ain't mevashel. For the most part, a klisheni would not be able to cook. Okay, what would be the status of what the Shulchan Aruch calls a davar gush? Davar gush means a salad. This is if I have a big roast that was cooking in the oven. Now I take it out from the pan and I put it onto a serving tray. Is that serving tray now considered to be a klisheni? You would say?
Yeah.
Yes. Why not?
Because you didn't cook in it.
I didn't cook in it, so it should be a klisheni. And therefore, if it's a klisheni, what should I be allowed to do?
Add spices.
Add spices. Or if I want to take vegetables and I want to garnish this meat and I want to put all kinds of different vegetables on top of it, maybe I don't have to be concerned, because after all, this is only a klisheni, and therefore it should be permissible on Shabbos. Correct? Sounds right. However, not so simple. Why is it not so simple? Because the whole understanding of why a klisheni is not able to be mevashel is because defanas makaros, Tosfos said. It's because the walls of that bowl are going to cool down the substance inside, and therefore it's no longer going to be hot enough to be able to cook something that I'm going to put in. However, when we're talking about a davar gush, when we're talking about a salad, so what do you have? You have a big serving tray. You put the roast on the serving tray, but the walls of the tray are not touching the meat, just the bottom. And the rest of the meat is still sizzling hot. So therefore, I would say, maybe it's as if it's still on a kli rishon. Why should it lose its status of kli rishon if, after all, we don't have the whole idea of defanas makaros in this case? Maybe the bottom of the roast is getting cooled off. But it's not like the soup where the bowl and all the walls all around this soup are now going to cool it down. That is the big discussion that the Achronim have in terms of how we look at a davar gush, a solid, when it is transferred from the original pan to now being on the serving tray. Would we say that it still retains its status of a kli rishon, or would you say that now it becomes a kli sheni? The Rama writes that kli sheni en mevashel is across the board. When we say that a kli sheni is not going to be able to be hot enough to cook something, that means whether it's a solid or a liquid, so long as I put it into a secondary utensil, it would no longer be a problem at all, and that is nothing to be concerned about. That is the opinion of the Rambam. The Magen Avraham, one of the most important commentaries on the side of the Shulchan Aruch HaRachayim, the Magen Avraham disagrees. And the Magen Avraham says, you have to look. If it's still sizzling hot, and it's yatzar lettuce, which it probably is, then says the Magen Avraham, you have no reason to assume that this is permissible. The whole rationale that we gave of why klisheni ain't mevashel is not relevant to this case. It's only because you had a bowl, and the bowl is going to cool down the content of the soup that is inside of it. That is not relevant to the case that we're describing here of when you have a roast that is taken from the original pan and put onto a serving tray, that would not be something that can be carried over. And therefore the Mishnah Berurah says, based on that, yesh lehizar bazeh, we have to be careful about this. When you have meat that is put onto a klisheni, maybe you have to be concerned that it is not going to be considered a klisheni. It is still hot enough to be a kli rishon, and therefore it can still be mevashel. A very practical example of this, Rav Moshe Feinstein talks about, what is the status of ketchup? How do you look at ketchup? Ketchup is a liquid or a solid? Yeah? It's a food or a beverage? What? I think actually there's a distinction between American ketchup and Israeli ketchup. Yes, Israeli ketchup is not my favorite. You know, I like your terminology better, but it's just not my favorite. But maybe there's a distinction there between American ketchup and Israeli ketchup, right? Maybe one is considered more of a solid and one is considered more of a liquid. Israeli ketchup is very, what do you call it, viscous maybe? Is that the right word? Right? It pours. And Ramosha writes, well, when we have ketchup in America, Heinz ketchup, as he describes, it is not really something that pours. It happens to be that it oozes out from the jar. But that would be a major question. Would that be considered a liquid or a solid? And that's with regard to, remember we discussed last week, whether there's bishul achar bishul. Is there bishul achar bishul with regard to a davar lach and a davar yavish? We spoke about that last week. So would I be allowed to take ketchup and put it on top of a burning hot piece of meat that just came out of the oven? What do you say? It's a good question. Two questions here. Question number one is that burning hot piece of meat that is now on my plate, is that considered to be a kli sheni? Or do we say that by a davar gush, we still assume that since the walls of the plate are not able to cool down the whole piece of meat like it would when you have a bowl of soup, maybe we would say that it retains the status of kli rishon? That's question number one. Question number two is, even if we say that this still retains the status of a kli rishon, would you say that ketchup is considered like a davar lach or a davar yavish? Do you say that ketchup is a liquid or a solid? The difference being, ketchup is always cooked beforehand, right? Ketchup is cooked tomatoes. So would we say that ketchup, which is cooked beforehand, is the yesh bishul achar bishul? Or would you say, no, what do you mean? It's a solid. And we generally paskin ein bishul achar bishul. These are two major questions that Ramosha talks about. Fascinating. But it's something to think about. Ramosha says he thinks that you can be makel. He thinks you can be lenient about this for both of those reasons. Number one, says Ramosha, maybe it's possible that we paskin like the Ramah, not like the Magen Avraham, that when it comes to a klisheni, when you have even a davar gush, when you have something that is solid, the Ramah says, klisheni enim avashal across the board, period. Number two, he says, even if a klisheni with a davar gush is mevashel, in this case, we're talking about a solid, and a bishul achar bishul. You don't look at ketchup as a liquid, you look at ketchup as a solid. So that's the major discussion that Ramosha has in a tshuva, very interesting. If you want to look it up, it's in Arachayim Chelek Dalid, Siman Ayin Dalid, a very fascinating tshuva, where he actually talks about the mechanics of how we understand what ketchup is all about. I think it's very, very interesting, but it's very, very relevant to this case. Now, we're now introduced to a third category, which is something that is brought up in the Sefer Yireim. The Sefer Yireim says, what about a kli shlishi? What would he say, a kli shlishi? What's the status of a kli shlishi? So the Sefer Yireim writes, just like in a kli sheni, we have to be concerned that even though normally we say kli sheni einu mevashel, however, if you're talking about something which is kale habishel, something which is very susceptible to heat and can be cooked very easily, you have to be concerned even a kli sheni. Says the Sefer Yireim, when you come to a kli shlishi, it's the same thing. If it's hot enough that it can actually cook something, then that's going to be considered bishul. Even in a kli shishi, and even in a kli ravi, doesn't matter how far along you go, if it's still going to be burning hot, and you have something which is kale habishul, something which is considered very easy to cook, you have to always be concerned about bishul b'shabbos, even when it's very far removed from the original pot. Shmir Shabbos Gilchasa has a discussion about it, but Ramosha disagrees. And Ramosha says, this cannot be. A kli shlishi cannot retain heat enough to cook anything. And therefore, Moshe completely and entirely rejects this whole idea of a kli shlishi, and he says, this is why the Gemara does not introduce us to this concept, because it doesn't exist. Says Moshe, a kli rishon is something that's straight from the fire. A kli sheni is the bowl that we take directly from that which came from the fire, and therefore it goes down a notch. A kli shlishi is something that is so far removed from the original, there's no way it retains enough heat by the time it gets to the third item. And therefore, he says, once we're talking about a kli shlishi, there is no reason to be concerned at all, even if we're talking about kale habishul, because there is no way that a kli shlishi is hot enough to be able to cook something that is put into it. Okay. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam shehakol nihi avedvaro. Thank you. I'm going to do next semester.
I'll do that.
If not, I'm in trouble. Okay, so please advocate. Okay, this leads us into a very important discussion about making tea on Shabbos. What do we do about making tea on Shabbos? And we'll get, in a few minutes, we'll get to the discussion about coffee, which I'm assuming is much more relevant to all of you. I've never drank a coffee in my life, so I don't know. This coffee discussion is not really for me, but I drink tea all the time. You what?
I never drink coffee forever either.
You never drink coffee, but you do drink Treif Coke from McDonald's.
I haven't yet.
I'm just saying.
I haven't yet.
Okay, but that's... First on your list should be a regular coffee before we get to the Coke from McDonald's.
That's what you think.
Okay, it's all good. Should all be well. Okay, so what's the story with tea? Making tea on Shabbos is a very interesting. I wouldn't stomp pick on anyone. Amanda lives in my neighborhood, and I know her, and I know she can handle it. All of you can calm down, don't worry. Okay, so what's the story with tea? What's the story with tea? And she asked for it. What's the story with tea? So most teas contain uncooked leaves and spices that are put together in a pouch, and then you put it into hot water, and once you put it into hot water, it starts to cook. So the question is, what's the story on Shabbos? What am I supposed to do? Now, many of the teas that we have today are actually cooked in advance. The tea leaves are cooked. And if that is the case, then we come back to the discussion of Ein Bishul Achar Bishul. So if it was already cooked before Shabbos and now you're going to put it into hot water, maybe there's no problem at all. So hot water in a cup that comes from an urn. What is that? Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni? So the urn is a Kli Rishon. That's the source of heat. That's where the water was originally heated up. I take the hot water from the urn, I now put it into a cup. So now it's in a klisheni. Generally, as we said, klisheni eino mevashel. However, maybe we're dealing with kali abishel, like Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said. Maybe the tea leaves, because they're cut so thin, maybe they can actually cook even in a klisheni. And that's really where this whole discussion comes into play. That's why this is extremely relevant. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said, as we mentioned, we have to be concerned about Kali Abishal when we talk about tea leaves. And therefore, he said, to take a tea bag and put it into hot water on Shabbos would not be permissible, even in a klisheni, because that would be considered Kali Abishal. And therefore, we'd have to be concerned that by doing so, you are violating the Malacha Abishal. My father writes a very surprising chiddush from Rav Soloveitchik, who said that his grandfather, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, used to make tea every Shabbos. How did he make tea every Shabbos? So he says he used to take a tea bag and put it into a klisheni. But why aren't you concerned about Kali Abishal? So Rav Soloveitchik said an interesting chiddush. If I remember correctly, my father explains it, that when you put tea into the hot water, the reason why it turns dark is not because it's cooking, but rather because it's getting wet. What's the proof of that? Obvious proof? Iced tea. Iced tea is the obvious proof. If you take a tea bag and put it into cold water, it will also turn brown. So Rav Soloveitchik said, obviously what's happening when I put the tea bag in is not that it's cooking the tea leaves, that's not the reason why the flavor is being extracted, but rather because it's becoming wet. Once it gets wet, then the flavor comes out, as you can see from making iced tea. Try it at home. You're making faces. Try it at home or downstairs.
Special iced tea, or like special cold brew.
So he said, take for example, take a tea bag and put it in cold water. The water's going to turn brown as well. Now, it's going to get more brown if it's in hot water. But it's going to get brown if it's in cold water, which means that the way that this flavor is extracted is essentially really because it's getting wet, not so much because it's cooking. That's one thing that he said. The second thing that he said is because Reb Chaim assumed that tea is considered to be not part of the category of Kali Abishal. Our Gemara says, when making the list of Kali Abishal, the Gemara says spices are certainly not part of Kali Abishal. Now, if Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said, maybe today's spices are different because they're cut so thin, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik disagreed. And that's why Rav Soloveitchik, following his grandfather, felt that there would be no problem at all to make tea on Shabbos. That is not the generally accepted opinion. Most do not assume like Rav Chaim, like Rav Soloveitchik. Most assume that making tea on Shabbos would be some kind of problem because it runs into Kali Abishal in a klisheni. And therefore, we now have to think about what are the options if one does want to make a tea on Shabbos. Option number one is if you cook the tea before Shabbos, right? You put the tea bag in an urn before Shabbos, and then it dries up, and then you reuse it again. That would certainly not be a problem. Why? Because we assume ein bishul achar bishul. So that's for sure okay. Problem is there may be no flavor left once you put it again on Shabbos into hot water. So maybe that's not an option that you want to do. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, I don't believe in Kli Shlishi. Kli Shlishi doesn't exist. The Sefer Yireyim made up this concept of a Kli Shlishi. The Gemara itself only talks about Kli Rishon being Bishul. Kli sheni eino mevashel except for kali abishal. Kli shlishi, he says, is definitely going to be cooled off enough that there could be no problem or concern of bishal at all. And therefore, Moshe is of the opinion the easiest way around it is take the urn, pour it from the urn into a cup that will make it a kli sheni. Pour from that cup into a third cup, thereby making it a kli shlishi. It's still going to be hot. You're still going to see steam coming up. Yeah, it's hot, but it's going to cool down so quickly that you have no concern about bishul with regard to a kli shlishi. That is the way Rav Moshe Feinstein gets around the problem. The Mishnah Brura gives us an Eitzah, where he says, the way to do it is to make tea essence before Shabbos. Tea essence means, everybody knows what tea essence is? Tea essence is a concentrate, right? So you have like, let's say 10 tea bags that you put in hot water before Shabbos, and then you have that concentrate, and you pour the concentrate into the hot water on Shabbos itself. So you're not taking the tea bag and pouring it in, you're taking the hot water that has the tea flavor in it, very strong tea flavor in it, and you're pouring it in. I've done that on Shabbos in people's houses. It's gross. Maybe it's because the people whose houses I've gone to don't know how to do it right. Maybe. I don't know. But that's what the Mishnah Berurah recommends. That's what the Mishnah Berurah recommends. That when making tea, that's what you should do. Again, Rav Soloveitchik felt no concern at all because, as we mentioned, he didn't think that this was Kali Abishal. Rav Moshe said the easiest way around is just to do with a Kli Shlishi, which is not the biggest deal. Really not such a big deal at all. And those are definitely two options that one can think about. Yeah.
How is tea essence not a problem? Because it's putting liquid into a liquid.
Putting liquid into a liquid. So let's think about it. What should be the problem? Bishul. Right? However, the Gemara clearly says in Masechet Shabbos that you can't cook water in a kli sheni. Although there's a discussion about what is Kali Abishal, what's not, one of the things that was clearly on the list of what cannot cook in a kli sheni is water. So therefore, we assume that this would not be a problem. Yeah.
Is it a problem not on Shabbos, but like a Bishalakum problem for not drinking tea for a Jew?
Is there a problem for a non-Jew to make tea for a Jew? I've never thought about that question. The answer has to be no. Right? You go all the time and you buy coffee from a Starbucks. Right? So how do you do that?
Well, first, I didn't know this, but Starbucks tea doesn't have a hamster.
That's a separate problem. Okay.
But, yeah, why is it not a problem? Do it in the coffee's
raw. I never thought about that question. How can that be? It could be. I'm speaking out of nowhere now, so maybe I'll look it up and I'll get back to you. But if I were to formulate an answer, I think it would be like this. The Shulchan Aruch says that before somebody davens in the morning, you're not allowed to eat because a number of reasons. But one of the reasons that is given is based on the Gemara Masechet Sanhedrin, where the Gemara says, "Lasochu al adam." We have a pasuk that says you're not allowed to eat on the blood. Major discussion in the Gemara and in the Rishonim, exactly how do you understand the simple words of that pasuk, don't eat over blood. The Ramban actually writes, the simple understanding of the pasuk means, Ramban writes on Chumash, what it means is, that they used to have a pagan custom that everybody would dance around the fire and eat and drink and do whatever. It was part of their service to Avodah Zarah. And what the Torah is telling us is, don't do that. Don't serve Avodah Zarah. But that's not generally what the Gemara assumes is the pshat in the pasuk. One of the assumptions that the Gemara has is, lo sochlu kodem shetispalalu al dimchem. One is not allowed to eat before they daven. Kodem shetispalalu al dimchem. Before we daven for our lives, we don't have a right to eat. Why not? Says the Gemara, "Va'osi hishlachta acharei ga'avecha." You're so arrogant. You think you're more important than God. You should stand up and first ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for life, and then you should go have your breakfast. Fine. Therefore, says the Gemara, since really the root of this problem of eating before davening really stems from gaiva, from putting myself before God. Therefore, says the Gemara, if you're going to go take a cup of water, that would not be a problem. Why wouldn't it be a problem? Because that's not gaiva. Water is just that I should refresh myself. Water is just that I should clear my throat. water is that I should be able to concentrate better during davening. Otherwise, I'm going to be feeling very parched. I just woke up from a whole night of sleep. And therefore, we assume that water is not considered to be gaiva at all, and therefore water would not be an issue for someone to drink before davening. Okay. Then the Acharonim say, what about tea? I don't like to drink water. I like to have flavored water. So the Acharonim say, no, tea is considered flavored water, not a problem. That's the same as water. Fine. Then the Acharonim took it a little further, and they said, what about coffee? I don't like tea. So can I have a coffee in the morning before I go to daven? Acharonim say, yeah, coffee is water. It's just flavored water. So there's no problem of drinking flavored water. It's the same as water. Okay. But the Aruch HaShulchan, I believe, writes, of course, this means that you're not going to put any milk in your coffee. That's not flavored water. That's really having something very fancy before davening. If you're going to put milk into the coffee, that would be something that is totally unacceptable to do before davening. The later Acharonim say, no, nowadays, nobody drinks black coffee, or most people don't drink black coffee. They don't enjoy it. Part of drinking a coffee is not only that I'm going to put coffee in, but I'm going to put some milk in. Right? I would imagine everybody here who drinks a coffee puts milk in. And therefore, we assume that when we say that you're allowed to have a coffee, it means it's included that you're also allowed to put some milk into the coffee as well, in order that it should be something that's drinkable. Okay, that's where the Acharonim stop. Then they talk about putting a little bit of sugar in. Okay, so they say a little bit of sugar is also okay. The way I think about it now is, the way it's trickled down into our generation is, so coffee's mutter to drink before davening, right? However, you go to Central Avenue, for those of you who haven't had the schus, you should try it once, and you go into Taddy's. If you've never met the Chevra in Taddy's, you're missing out on life. And you go in there, and I'm always amazed when I go there and I wait online for a bagel. It's a bagel store. And I hear the orders that people have of coffee. It amazes me. It amazes me how many specifications one person can have on one cup of coffee in one bagel shop. Like, that, I think, is exactly what the Gemara is talking about. Va'usi hishlachta acharei davech. Yes, you need to go to Central Avenue before davening to go get your coffee that needs to be exactly this, with exactly that, with this much whipped cream and with that much cinnamon and everything else. That is exactly what's not allowed. When the Gemara says that you're allowed to have water before davening, and then we expand that to tea, and we extend that to coffee, and we extend it to coffee with milk, it doesn't mean we extend it to the French press with the, I don't know, all the coffee options, but all the things. Give me some help here. Whatever, all the things that come along with people who really are coffee lovers, that is not what the Gemara had in mind, and it's certainly not what the Acharonim had in mind. So I would say, the reason for mentioning all this is because I would say, back to your question, why is there no bishulakum when it comes to tea or coffee? I would say because the way we view that is, it's water, it's just flavored water. And flavored water, I would assume, is not a problem. I don't know that this is the right answer. I'm suggesting, and maybe that's the answer. I would love to look it up, because maybe there's a much more simple answer that I'm not thinking of. But that's what I would say is probably the right mahalik hamachshava. Yeah.
If we said that, like nowadays tea bags are usually puffed, then what would be the problem if it's in the shop?
Because not all of them are.
So if it is, then it would be a problem?
If it is, then the same Bishalach or Mishal, correct. Yeah. But it's hard to know, right? You have to look at the box and you have to read it out. So it's not so simple. Okay. What about drinking coffee on Shabbos? Making coffee on Shabbos? Making coffee on Shabbos is pretty complicated. It's complicated because making coffee in general sounds like it's pretty complicated. Everybody has their own way of making it, and there are so many different methods of drinking coffee on Shabbos. Now, there is such a thing. In 2009, there was a discussion about micro-ground coffee. Anybody knows what micro-ground coffee is? So, there was this new invention that was manufactured that instead of using purely freeze-dried granules, Starbucks came out with this thing called Via Coffee. What? Via, right. So what's Via? What is Via all about? Explain it to us.
Oh, I don't know. It's just a lot better.
It's a lot better, right. So why is it a lot better? There's a reason. There's a science why it's a lot better. Anybody knows? Instant coffee is not close to as good as Via coffee, correct?
Correct.
Why is that?
It's a different consistency.
Why is it a different consistency?
I guess it's cooked differently. One's freeze-dried, the other...
So the answer is as follows. You have to find out the mitzvahs. Why is one better than the other? So here's what's amazing. I went for years to the OU on Friday with my father. And I was always amazed. You know, we take it for granted when we have a kashrus apparatus here in the United States or wherever we go in the world. And maybe we don't take time to think about the fact that, like, so much goes into running a kashrus agency. What I'm most profoundly impressed by when I go to the OU, and I'm sure it's the same in the Starkey and the Hufkey also, I've just never been to their offices, but what I was most profoundly impressed by was my father used to go on every Friday, and they would present all the questions from the week to him on Friday. Now, you can have questions from 10 different areas in the country that have 10 different machineries and totally different set of circumstances, and they're presenting all these questions. Now, who do they bring in to present the questions? The way the OU has set up their system is there's one person who's an expert on cheeses. All he does all day is cheese. He knows everything about cheese. He knows nothing about anything else. There's one person who's an expert on fish and one person who's an expert on spices. And that expert, who's also a great Talmud Chacham, knows everything there is to know about that area, but nothing else. So what they do is when they have a shayla, they bring that person in. They have the company on the phone explaining the metzias. Sometimes you'll have a mashgiach takes a video of the plant to show what it is. Then you'll have the expert in the field of cheeses or of fish or of spices will come into the office. When you have all that together, it's much easier to gather the information that you need because this is the expert in the field. He's going to know a lot better than whatever we're going to Google in the next 5 minutes. So I've always been amazed how much they have an understanding of the metzias. And it's so important. It's so important to have an understanding of the metzias before getting involved in a shayla. And quite frankly, before asking a shayla, you have to make sure that you present the metzias properly as well. As a consumer, you need to make sure that you're giving over all the relevant information that can actually change the details of the outcome of the psak. Now, not always are you aware of what is a relevant detail and what perhaps is not a relevant detail. And that's why it's important just to say the story over as it happened, that they should know, whoever you're asking the shayla to should know exactly what it is that you're asking and to properly give an answer. So here, when we talk about Via Coffee, so for the last few years, since 2009 that you've been drinking Via Coffee, you've been asking yourself, why is it better? Never dawned on you to go take a step back and ask yourself, let me look up, why is Via Coffee actually better?
Think about it on Shabbos.
So here's the question, why is it better? Okay, because the regular classic instant coffee is then ground up. It's ground up roasted beans. But here, the Via Coffee, they take some that have not yet been roasted and they combine both of them together. And that's why they feel that it has a freshly brewed taste when you use the Via Coffee, because there is a component of that mixture that has never yet been cooked before. Whereas instant coffee has already been cooked in advance. When we talk about Via Coffee, there is some part of the mixture that has been cooked and some part of the mixture that has not been cooked. And that is why it is a major discussion with regard to Shabbos. Regular instant coffee, as we said, has been previously roasted. But over here, when we're talking about the Via Coffee, much of it has not been. And that is why it's a major shayla on Shabbos. So you would say, this has never been cooked before. Via Coffee should probably be prohibited to use on Shabbos, because after all, you're cooking it now. However, there's a very interesting psak in the Ramah. The Ramah in Siman Shin Yud Ches writes the following. He says, let's say I put salt into a kli rishon. Says the Ramah, would I be allowed to eat that item of food or not after I put salt onto it in a kli rishon? So I had a roast that's inside of a burning hot pot, and I go and I pour salt onto it. Am I in violation of bishul? Should be. It's a kli rishon. It's burning hot. Says the Rama, normally if a person violates bishul, are they then allowed to eat that item that they cooked on Shabbos? No. So would I be allowed to eat this roast that I now have cooked salt on top of it? Would that be permissible or not?
Is salt pre-cooked?
Let's say the salt is not, right? So would it be permissible or not? What would you say? The Rama says yes. Why yes? Says the Rama, because it's batel to the roast. It's so insignificant. The salt is just a small component of the roast, and therefore it's batel. And says the Rama, once it's mixed together with the roast itself, it no longer has any real significance on its own, and therefore even if someone violated bishul on Shabbos by putting the salt directly onto the roast, that would not be something that would preclude them from eating that roast subsequently. That's the way the Ramah understands the halacha. Now, perhaps you can make the same argument here. When I have this via coffee, most of the mixture has already been cooked before. Some of it has not been. Maybe I should say, just like the Ramah says, that if I put salt on top of a roast, it should be mutter. Maybe I should say here as well, that if I have this small, less significant portion of this mixture of coffee, where most of it has already been cooked and some of it has not been, maybe I should say it shouldn't be a problem. Because it should be batel, just like the salt. No? No, you don't like it. Why do you not like it?
I thought you can do something.
Okay, so a number of problems here. It's a little too complicated to get into all the problems, but one of the simple issues is because ein mevatlin nisr lechatchila. The Gemara does tell us a rule. It's a Gemara Maseches Beitza. It's Paskin and Shulchan Aruch here as well. Ein mevatlin nisr lechatchila. What does that mean? While it's true that if a few drops of milk fall into a pot of chicken soup, we say it's batel. We're going to say that it's going to be overpowered by the soup itself as long as there's enough to overdo it. However, it doesn't mean that I'm allowed to be mevatel isur lechatchila. It doesn't mean I'm allowed to go and pour milk into the chicken soup when I know that it's going to become batel. That's not permissible. The only thing the Gemara says is, if it happens to have fallen in, then you're allowed to use it. But you can't be mevatel isur lechatchila. You can't set up a system where you know that the bittel is going to end up happening. The same would be over here. If I know from the outset that by putting this coffee into the hot water, it is inevitably going to cook that part of the mixture which is not yet cooked, I would say that should certainly be a problem on Shabbos. So that's one issue that comes up. Another issue that is raised by the Achronim is, what about the fact that we have a halacha devar sheyesh lamatir and eina betela, which is complicated. If you didn't get that, it's okay. We could talk about it another time. But there are a number of different issues that are raised with regard to this Ramah and whether or not it is applicable. I have spoken to my father about via coffee on Shabbos, and we went through all of these issues of Bittul and whether or not we could apply this Ramah or perhaps not. The bottom line is that my father said we do have a right to rely on the Bittul, and we do have a right to say that therefore we can treat it the same as instant coffee. And the same way that you're allowed to use instant coffee on Shabbos, potentially you'd be allowed to use via coffee as well. Again, this is something that is very contentious and very questionable. But my father does feel that la'alacha, we would be allowed to get to use that because we can get around all these other side obstacles of bittul, and we can rely on that psak of the Ramah with regard to the salt on top of the roast on Shabbos. Yeah.
Oh, I was just
going to
ask you about the salt. Isn't that also the mercy
here? The salt? What do you mean?
Well, I don't really understand how the mercy.
Yeah, that's why it's a little more involved in Hilchos Bittul in general in Yeruday. So we're going to stay away from that right now. But that is definitely something that is a consideration that is brought up. What about pour over coffee? Pour over coffee, what do you say? So what do you do when you have pour over coffee? I basically have coffee grains inside of a filter. I pour the water over it, and it slowly drips through. So is that permissible on Shabbos or not? The water, as it's dripping through, is going to absorb the coffee that's inside of the filter. So what do you say? One easy way to get around any bishul concerns is pour water from a klisheni over the coffee. We all agree that klisheni ain't a mevashel. So therefore, I should say, that shouldn't be a problem at all. So as far as bishul is concerned, very easy to get around the problem. However, there is a more challenging issue, and that is borer. I'm not allowed to sort or sift something on Shabbos. Isn't that considered sifting or sorting? When I have the water, and I pour it now into the coffee, into the filter, and now you have a mixture of coffee beans and water together, but what's going to be extracted is the water, and you're going to leave behind the coffee beans. Isn't that borer b'Shabbos? Shouldn't that be an issue? So the Gemara Maseches Shabbos has an interesting discussion about borer, and the Gemara says that if I use borer with a sorting instrument, that would certainly be considered to be borer, so shouldn't this be an issue? It would seem, on a face value, that that should be a problem. However, the Gemara says, the Mishnah says in Maseches Shabbos, that what if I have a grape sediment, right? So that means I have all the sediments of the grapes with water, and I pour that into a filter. Would that be a problem on Shabbos or not? Why do I want to do that? I want to do that I should be able to have wine without all the pulp. Right, without all the sediments in it. Everyone understand what I'm saying? So would that be permissible or not? Would that be permissible or not? So the Gemara says, to pour that through a filter would be real Borer B'Shabbos. However, the Gemara then changes the case. What if I have sediment inside of a filter? And I take water and I pour it into the filter. And the objective, the essence of what I'm trying to do is, I want that the water should pick up the taste of the sediment, and then it should drip out from beneath the filter and leave all the sediment behind. So it's not that I have a whole mixture and I then pour it into a filter. It's all of the sediment is inside of a filter, and now I want the water to absorb the taste of that sediment. So I pour water on top of that filter, and I want it to drip through in order to get the absorption of that taste from the grapes that are there. Is that permissible on Shabbos or not? What do you say? You say yes? Why yes?
Because you're not, like, the original mixture wasn't mixed.
Oh, so the Shulchan Aruch paskins based on this Gemara that it would be permissible. Why? Why would it be permissible? Because there was no mixture. There was no mixture at all. It was water before it started. It's water after it starts. When I have the first case that the Gemara says, there I have a mixture of sediment and water, and now I'm trying to sift through one from the other. But here, I have water. I'm pouring the water through something. It's the same way if I pour water onto rocks, and now the water dripped out, and I'm left with water. Is that considered borer? Why not? Because there's no mixture. All I'm doing is pouring water, and it's transferring from one place to the other, and on the way, it's passing through something else. And therefore, says the Shulchan Aruch based on the Gemara, that would be no problem at all, because when it comes through, you're not adding anything extra to the water. It's just extra flavor, but it's not anything extra to what it is itself. And therefore, it would seem that using that on Shabbos would not be a problem of Borer. It certainly wouldn't be a problem of Bishul, so long as you make sure that you do it in a way where it's being where it's beklisheni, so that you're not going to violate the prohibition of Bishul b'Shabbos. So you can't pour directly from an urn, but you could pour from a klisheni onto that, and then obviously that would circumvent any Bishul considerations. Yes?
Is the second case in the Gemara, they're not using a filter anymore, or they are using a filter?
They are. They are using filter, but the filter has the sediment in it, and the water is by itself. So I'm just taking the water and pouring it on top of the filter. So there the Gemara says that would not be a problem. Okay.